Hi, this is Alan Chartok. Donna Burkhardt is acting executive director of Gould Farm, a highly regarded residential therapeutic community in the Berkshires dedicated to helping adults with mental illness since 1913. She grew up in a Mennonite community in the Delaware Flatlands and met her husband, Wayne, at a Mennonite college in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. With their two young sons, graduate degrees, and a four-year stint in what is now the Democratic Republic of Congo behind them, she and Wayne arrived at Gould Farm in 1984. She's been an intrinsic part of Gould Farm ever since in her role as Director of Client Admissions, which has included admissions and marketing. She's been acting executive director since 2012. Work and life at Gould Farm, she says, has provided her and her family with an intrinsically satisfying 30 years of marriage, child-rearing, and worthy integrated endeavor. It has also borne us through the unspeakable grief of losing our older son, Christopher, to terminal mental illness. Donna Burkhardt describes Gould Farm as a progressive, contemporary mental health community, albeit modestly at the cutting edge of current psychiatric thought and practice. Welcome, Donna Burkhardt.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, Donna, this is very impressive. I've wanted to do this interview for a long, long time because I am an incredible admirer of what you do. I've known at least one client who has really been helped by Gould Farm, and I have to say that this is going to be a good opportunity for all of us to find out exactly what Gould Farm is, what it does, how it supports itself. So let's begin. What is Gould Farm?
Gould Farm is first and foremost a farm. We like to say sometimes that Canyon Ranch, which is much better known in the Berkshires, is not really a ranch. But Gould Farm is a farm. We have the land, we have the forest, and that is a piece of our heritage that we value highly in terms of our guest learning how to live with mental illness.
So who comes?
People come from all over the U.S., and everyone who comes is 18 or older, and they are all carrying some vulnerability, which they are at some stage of dealing with, learning how to deal with. We're not working with people who have an acute symptomology that is preventing them from being able to engage in community life or in preparation for learning the skills they need for the long term.
So do you interview to get in?
Absolutely. And in order to sustain the quality of community that can really be helpful to people, it's important for people to be coming at a time when they can really benefit from the services Gould Farm offers.
So you said that they have to be able to communicate, that they have to be able to participate. When people come, do they have to work or get out? I mean, put in a different way?
Absolutely. We are not a separation from life as usual, but we are an alternative track so that when people come, they actively want to be engaged. They are in a community where what they contribute is just as essential as anything they hope to gain. I've been there for 30 years and I wake up in the morning and say, today, the best thing I can do is create community. Someone can be there for one day. And they wake up in the morning, that first morning, they're in a completely different situation. They're from the Upper East Side or they're from California and they've never been on a farm before in New England. And they wake up and say, Donna told me that what I do today is create community. You don't have to be thriving and healthy in order to hold that concept. So our folks can come in with a lot of vulnerabilities and that's where they start. We start together because what people give is as important as what they hope to get.
So, Donna, take us through a day of a client. What does the client do?
It starts early.
How early?
It starts at 7:30 for breakfast, and it's a good, healthy farm breakfast with our own sausage or bacon or brown eggs from our chickens.
Who does the cooking?
We have a team, and everything at the farm is done by a team with guests and staff working side by side together.
Guests are clients.
Okay. And that starts with our 100-year history where the Goulds came and the people that they served were their guests.
Who were the Goulds?
The Goulds were entrepreneurs in the early part of the century who, Will Gould was a trained minister and his wife, Agnes Goodyear, who comes from the Goodyear line of rubber tires. and they had no children, but he had a passion for helping people and started out with young men in the city, lads who had no purpose and were lost during that era in the early 1900s. He was highly influenced by the moral treatment era, which is a very European concept.
And what is it?
The moral treatment was that people don't get better unless they are given the opportunity to help, to serve. And he believed that, both as a minister and as a progressive social thinker.
And what was his denomination as a minister?
Congregational, New England, generally, yes.
Okay. How many acres in this?
650. That has varied through the years.
But do people give you land when they...
Right. Much of it has been donated. But also, he bought a large area of land, and he got it for a fairly reasonable price. And somebody told him that that was because it was infested with rattlesnakes. And so he was very...
It
was not infested with rattlesnakes. But he got it for a good price, and we have had that central piece of land all these years. And then, of course, other pieces have been acquiesced.
So what do you farm?
The simple livelihood kind of things that provide for our own sustainability. We have dairy cattle. We have some beef cattle. We have pigs. We've had sheep in the past. We don't now because it's time for the pastures to take a rest. We grow our own grain and hay and huge vegetable gardens of wonderful organic food. We're not an organic farm by mission, but we certainly are by practice.
You're in a little restaurant, aren't you?
We do. The Roadside Store, right on Route 23, and is well known. In fact, so well known that sometimes we are hard put to serve everybody.
Yeah. And everybody gets assigned a job.
Assigned, but they also have choices, and the choices are important, but sometimes we're encouraging people to take risks and doing things that they're not comfortable because growth is important.
Give us an example of some of the jobs.
So most important when people come in, they start in what we call forest and grounds. And that is, we work in teams.
Yes.
That is the team where people are held mostly in the center and are doing things that they can follow along if they're starting out with completely feeling alien to the environment and not feel lost. They can follow along. And at the same time, the day goes smoothly, it's structured. And then as they adjust to being at the farm, then they can move to other teams. But that forest and grounds is the trails, maple syrup in the spring, apple cider in the fall, gathering the apples, keeping up, doing the dishes, the floors, everything that sustains our community, we do together.
Now, you mentioned before that you don't take everyone who might want to come and that you draw the line in terms of people who can't communicate or who can't be citizens of the farm. What are some of the psychiatric familiar designations that you do take and don't take?
Right. We work across the board of what is traditionally known as major mental illness. And there's some concern these days with the term mental illness, but I use it here carefully. We work with depression, major severe depression, bipolar disorder, schizoaffective, and schizophrenia across that continuum. But we're working with post-acute cases. So these are generally people who are stabilized, who have some insight into what they're dealing with, who say, I have this illness. It's not fair. I don't like it. I didn't ask for it, but it's mine to learn to manage. And with Gould Farm's help, I can do that.
Now, schizophrenia has a bad name. A lot of people think that schizophrenia is not really solvable as a psychiatric problem. Is it?
Anything is solvable, and schizophrenia doesn't go away. That doesn't mean it's not solvable, for goodness sake. People can learn to live with schizophrenia just like people learn to live with severe back injuries. Paraplegics live quality lives. That's within them to decide if they can do that or not. So people with schizophrenia can also learn to live quality lives. It takes time. It takes skills. It's not done in 3 weeks in a hospital or simple stabilization on a medication. It takes a village. It takes a true community to learn to deal with the vulnerabilities that come with a diagnosis like schizophrenia.
How long do residents or clients stay?
It varies depending on needs, depending on what the individual is ready for at any given moment. So sometimes we have people come who say, I don't need this. I'm ready to go back to school. And they don't realize in that moment that completing their education is going to be meaningless until they learn to manage the vulnerabilities, the symptoms of their vulnerability. But, so they stay maybe 3 months. But generally, we feel like we can do our best work when we have people between 6 to 12 months.
Is there ever a time that a client says, I'm not ready to leave yet? And you say,
oh, sure. Yes. More often than not, when people settle in and feel like they want to be there forever is when we say, okay, now you move on and you create community in the wider world and use these skills that you have internalized to do that and to help others create community, because helping others does not stop when you leave Gould Farm. And I think that's one of the biggest distinctions. It's not just all about me and what I receive when you're a client at Gould Farm, when you're a guest at Gould Farm. It's what you have to give. And it's that continuation of giving in the wider world. And that's what our society needs to learn about. The people with mental illness have so much to give. And society has put up walls of stigma and discrimination that prevent their being able to do that. So not only are they burdened with a vulnerability, they're burdened with the stigma and with the discrimination. And that's our fault, not their fault.
What's the staff look like? Is there a psychiatrist on staff?
Absolutely. Dr. Jesse Goodman, who's in the Berkshires, happens to be our wonderful psychiatrist. He is a very good man, lives up to his name. We have a psychiatric nurse. We have LICSWs on staff, and they all work
social
together.
Worker.
Yes, social workers who are licensed.
Yeah.
So the therapeutic medical component is an extremely important part, but it's not the only thing that is important. In the triad of what matters most, there is the support, the clinical supports that are traditional. There is that clinical support happening in the context of true community, and there is meaningful work. When I shake hands with you and meet you for the first time, I might say, what do you do? Who are you? How are you? And what do you do? So those are the three things we address. Who are you? Not, I'm a schizophrenic, but I am Donna Burkhart. The next question, how are you? Not, I'm sick, but I'm recovering. I'm learning how to deal with an illness. And then what do you do? The world is full of work. The world is full of talents. And I'm a musician. I work down at the farm. I pasteurize milk. I make cheese.
Costs money.
It does cost money, and that's where our 100-year heritage has brought us to this point, where in our charter, we are committed to not keeping someone who truly is eligible and whose family is willing to be engaged at an appropriate level for their income.
Sure.
They cannot be blocked from being at Gould Farm. And so that's why we count on the support of so many people around us, just as radio stations count on the support of people. We need that kind of community participation. So we are a nucleus, Gould Farm, but Gould Farm is a wider concept, and there are so many Gould Farmers who have supported us through the years who continue to do that.
Alumni.
They can't all work there, but they can help.
So do alumni kick in?
Absolutely. Former guests kick in. Former families of former guests kick in to help. And we have such a record of longevity in terms of the donations that come to us. So maybe it's only $200 a year, but you factor that in over 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and it gets bigger.
Do you work by committee? In other words, staff. How do you decide who comes? Yes, we'll take this person, but not this person. How do you decide who goes?
It's a process where we do a screening, an initial application process, a careful screening. And I have done that for many years as part of my role as Director of Client Services. And then they are invited to come and experience the farm after an interview, but experience the farm for 2 weeks.
Oh,
so it's a 2-week, let's see if this works. And the family's input is important, the individual's input. We often have people who say, I don't know, but we can see where the farm is reaching up from underneath and grabbing them, and that they will thrive in this environment.
How important, Donna, is admission to the families of the people who come? In other words, in some cases, I'm assuming it must be a last chance.
Sometimes it is, but we feel like we often do better when we have people early on, at early onset of the illness, before all of the habits and the negative structures have formed for them. So we do that whenever possible. And the more the word can get out, the more we can reach people. Society has so much driven people into hiding, to not admitting that there's an illness. And that's changing. We see that changing. And I see that as a hopeful sign where people can say early on, a young college student who's been brilliant and is brilliant, who can say, I've got a vulnerability here that I've got to deal with, and then get help early can make the world of difference. And so people will come at any stage of the illness, of course, but the ones who can do best often are those for whom it's early onset.
Okay, so now the Berkshires, of course, are quite famous for the Austin Riggs Clinic. They offer intense psychotherapy, either from a psychologist or a psychiatrist to others. What's the difference between the Gould Farm model and the Riggs model?
We see ourselves at two ends of a continuum.
I see.
And we work very collegially with Austin Riggs. We have a wonderful relationship with them and do intra-referrals to one another. More often, we get referrals from them, probably because people who have done basic work there come to us to learn the skills for getting out of their head and into their hands.
Out of their head and into their hands.
Correct. And that's quite literal on a farm.
Could you riff on that a little bit? Out of their heads and into their hands.
Well, it doesn't do much good when you've got dinner to get out, or you've got cows to milk, or you've got cheese to process, to stand there thinking about skills in your head or how you're managing. You put your symptoms aside. You let the voices go for a moment if you're dealing with schizophrenia. The voices may be ongoing. That doesn't necessarily stop, but you've learned how to put them aside, what to do with them, so that you can get on with your life and your work.
What if somebody acts out? I'm sure it's happened. Somebody comes in and doesn't want to do the cheese that day, or doesn't want to milk the cow that day. How do you handle it?
That's where our therapists, they can process what is going on for them in that moment, in the reality of that. So it's not a matter of waiting a week and then talking to a doctor about something that happened a week ago that hardly seems relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. So that high level of integration of the clinical with the work, with the interactions in community, is extremely important. It's a whole model, a very holistic model. And there are many different models for this abroad as well. There's a very important dialectical model. It's called Open Dialogue. That's a Norwegian model. And we have looked at that, worked with that, and are incorporating aspects of that into what we do. And what is important there is that the individual who has the vulnerabilities is in the center, surrounded by caregivers, and not nearly all of those are professionals. But the professionals working with everyone around them creates a environment in which that person can become more whole in the world.
How much does it cost to run this place?
Our budget is in the millions. So it takes a lot, because so much of what is of value is in staffing and in endeavor. An endeavor of any kind takes a great deal to support.
I want to talk to you about community, if I may. This is a word that is central to what we try to do here at WAMC, and we think we have created a little bit of a radio community that goes into mm-hmm. six states. I'm not going to get into definitional issues with you, but here you have this farm. It's in a beautiful setting, but how does it relate to the wider community that surrounds it?
All of the Berkshires is a very specialized community.
Sure.
You know, it's just a given. We've been in Monterey. We've been partners with Monterey for so long. And we see the Berkshires so much focused on the arts, on all the wonderful things that happen here, from Tanglewood to drama to music drama. We see what we are doing with people as a very undervalued art, but one that is so essential in our world. And so we see ourselves as an essential part of the Berkshires. And what we have come to accept and thrive on is the kind of support we feel broadly in the Berkshires from all around us. And we know that we are an anomaly in the mental health world.
How so? Well, let me stop you right there. Why is it an anomaly?
Because mental health care serves the broadest number of people. The lowest common denominator kind of of services, and we are specializing in serving the individuals with the highest level of supports for each of them. And so that makes it sound exclusive, but I think what it simply means is that we can't serve everyone, but those whom we can serve, we serve extremely well. And it's not a matter of elitism or of financial inaccessibility. It is a matter of small scale, which our society at large is turning to and finding that when we industrialized, we went to mega, mega, mega everything. We lost so much in every single sector of our society. Mental health in particular has suffered from this. And so it is not always the best good to serve the largest number of people in one wide swipe, and certainly not with mental health. So we are that back to basics model.
My friend, long past Sebastian de Grazia, wrote a book called Of Time, Work, and Leisure years ago. And he predicted, quite correctly, that we were going to come to the point where there were going to be too few jobs for too many people. You guys do a wonderful job of providing work for your clients and for your guests, but then they have to go out and they have to find other productive work at a time when jobs are scarce, when we see that the tolls are no longer being handled by people, they're being handled by machines and everything else. So what is the aftercare effect? In other words, do you help people get jobs? What happens after they leave?
We have a what we call a supported transition program.
Yeah.
And that is where folks are no longer in residential care but are supported for the long term in exactly this kind of thing, finding jobs, finding their place in the world. And often their goals have changed dramatically from the doctor or lawyer that they were going to be, that our society pressures us into finding that niche that is meaningful. There's a great deal of work in peer supports in the mental health field for people who have recovered and who have so much more insight, so much more ability to reach the core of what someone is struggling with, and in tandem with psychiatry and in tandem with good therapy from professionals, can create that whole picture around someone else who is struggling. So there are many avenues in the helping professions for people who have struggled with mental illness. And this is the inverse of what is portrayed in the news media and in society at large, of people with mental health issues being on the outside, causing the trouble, creating the sensations, causing the violence. And much, much larger percentages of people with mental health issues are going into the helping fields in terms of helping and aiding recovery and creating new avenues. So not everyone who learns to work in a rehabilitation program goes into a sheltered workshop and pushes widgets. No, they are out there making differences in significant ways in the mental health field, in reaching out to working with seniors in elder care centers, countless ways, creating music. They're often so talented and have never had an opportunity for their strengths to outweigh their vulnerabilities. So given the tools to manage their vulnerabilities, their strengths can blossom and they can contribute. And our wrong is when we block that through stigma and discrimination.
Donna Burkhart, so I know you're not allowed to and wouldn't want to talk about individual clients. However, I do know that when people listen to this kind of an interview, they like stories. They like to hear what an individual, you know, has achieved. So without putting a name on anybody, could you give us one case history that you're very proud of?
Oh, I could give you a dozen.
I'll take them.
I'm thinking of one young man, the middle child in a family of five. And he, all his brothers were all physicians, lawyers, high-level financial analysts. And he struggled with a vulnerability. Boarding school, accepted at the best colleges. And instead, he went into hospital with severe psychotic disorder.
How did that manifest itself?
With a quite sudden break, hearing voices, with paranoid thoughts, psychotic thoughts, and he was hospitalized, got excellent care.
What's a psychotic thought?
A psychotic thought is something that is unrelated to the reality that others perceive around one. So we can say to the real reality.
Yeah.
But for him, his reality is just simply different, but it doesn't fit the reality that others are experiencing. So he got excellent care in hospital and then came to us after the first episode. He was with us for quite a long period of time, went through the entire length of our program. And then what he did that was equal to anything any of his doctor or lawyer brothers did was educate them about mental illness and why and how what he had experienced and what he was doing was equal to anything any of them had done in their professional lives. And he did that with such grace. And he is someone that I admire so much. And he has contributed. He is a peer counselor. And he says, I will not ever be a doctor, a lawyer. But that doesn't mean I don't have a place in the world, that I don't have something to contribute. And that is total success. And that is the reverse of what we have portrayed in the news media and in society as what happens with people who have schizophrenia. He had blatant, chronic, uncompromised schizophrenia. He uses medication. He uses it every day of his life. It is a tool, no different from a tool that a financial analyst uses, such as a computer. He uses the tool of medication, but that does not keep him stable. It's the skills he learned in how to relate to people, how to discern between what is psychotic thinking and what is helpful thinking, all of those tools he uses together to sustain his life. And again, he's not a doctor or a lawyer. That's not the goal. But he has a rich, meaningful life, a wonderful marriage and relationship.
Mm-hmm.
He's a success.
What are some of the prohibitions that you have at the farm? I mean, you take men and women, for example?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Of course.
So what happens?
Men and women live in the world. We're no different from the world.
Okay. So what happens when a relationship develops between two clients? Is that a no-no or is that something that's okay? Or what?
No, it's not a no-no. Relationships develop. The farm is a place, a piece of the real world. So we ask people to think carefully about their readiness for a relationship when they're dealing with so many issues, because the inclination is for people to rush into a relationship as the thing that will fix whatever's wrong.
Sure.
And of course, it just makes it more complex. So we ask people to think carefully about going into relationships. We start those discussions from day one, and we say, broaden your relationships. The farm is a community where everyone who's here can contribute to your growth and your understanding of what you're facing. But relationships do develop, and we've got a lot of marriages out there of people who met at the farm, and they've sustained long over time. We love that. But we don't discourage them. We don't prohibit them, but we work carefully with them so that people do not allow them to interfere with their individual journeys, their individual therapeutic journeys.
Now, I know that Gould Farm is famous for the volunteers that work there. What do the volunteers do?
The volunteers are staff. They do the work that we all do, but they're just doing it for a year or two and as an alternate path in their life. All over the world.
Yes.
We get volunteers. We have one from Ireland right now. We constantly have volunteers from Germany. They come often through social service agencies and church organizations that sponsor them for visas and so on, and it works extremely well. We're
very grateful for that. Do they need a salary?
Nope, they have a stipend, and they also have room and board. They have medical care, but they are giving. Their objective is service and learning, so that they're taking away the price of a college education in what they learn in a year or two in their service at Gould Farm.
And where do they live? Do they
get a room? We have accommodations for volunteers, often shared housing, simple, basic, but separate and their own place, because each of us as staff members needs a place where we can go to find how to be just simply alone with ourselves. So, and out of community in order to be fully in community.
You mentioned Tanglewood and Jacob's Pillow and the other places. Are the residents given an opportunity to, you know, participate in all of that?
Oh, of course. Yeah. We love it when we can go take a picnic and go to Tanglewood and all the Jacob's Pillow, as you say, and the Mount and Nong Keg picnics, all of these things. We do a lot of that. And that's where we feel so blessed to be in the Berkshires and to be so widely welcomed and given the support of complimentary tickets often And it means so much to us because we have so many people who could not afford that. And we are careful at Gould Farm to not be what we say, Granddaddy Gould, mm-hmm. because someone who does not have a lot of money has got to learn, has to know that they can't have everything supplied for them at Gould Farm and then go back to a life of poverty afterward. So people live within their means at Gould Farm. So some people have a lot of money, other people have almost none. So we live with that diverse economic demographic.
I'm not following. So if somebody has no money and they come to Gould Farm, mm-hmm. or somebody has a lot of money and they come to Gould Farm, do they live differently at Gould Farm? No.
No. Everyone works together. Everyone has similar rooms. No one receives more services than another. But not everyone can afford to go and buy everything they want in town. Some people are living on a very narrow allowance. Mm-hmm. Other people are able to afford a lot more and do what they want. So we're very grateful when there are complimentary tickets from Tanglewood, from other of the arts organizations. But we also know that we cannot afford to supply the same level for everyone simply because that's not the real world. Mm-hmm. Gould Farm is the real world. And while we want to enable people to have access to so much that is available, it's within the parameters of what real life offers.
Mm-hmm. Donna Burkhart, when you look at the success of Gould Farm, do you ever have somebody doing studies to see where everybody is?
Right. We have an outcome study that's been some 15 years now, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure of that exact number of years, and is ever expanding, and was started with the help of researchers at Williams College. And again, so fortunate to be in an atmosphere where we have the academic resources. So there is an outcome study that becomes more and more valid as it the longer it is in effect.
What's it showing?
It is showing what our guests do after. It is showing what we do well and where we need to make improvements. As our guests leave, they are interviewed. Those interviews are carefully fed in consistently into the system. And it is showing that while we are not changing the world, we are changing the lives of the majority of the people we serve.
You talked about the Berkshires before. My wife and I have chosen the Berkshires. We live there. We've been there since 1971 full-time, and we love it. There's a young man who's autistic, whose mother is wonderful and father is wonderful, and every day he comes past our house with somebody who's a helper, and we've watched this child growing and just wonderful. And one day I got into a discussion with the mother, his mother, who said that they were not prepared for when they got here, for the way in which Berkshireites created community and how accepting they are. I love that. And I'm wondering, when you were talking about the beauty of the Berkshires, whether or not you're finding that too.
We are finding that so much in our own little village of Monterey, but more broadly as well. Just this kind of opportunity that you're giving us today to talk about the farm, which is just this little enclave in the heart of Monterey. And people say, oh, I've heard about Gould Farm. I've known the name Gould Farm, and I know it's part of the Berkshires, but they don't have any idea what it is we do. But they're eager to learn. And so we are so open. We invite people to come, to stop at the roadside store, to stop at our harvest barn, which is our bakery, to call me, to say, could I come by for a meal? And it's so surprising to them to come and be invited for a meal. And there are our children flocking around the table. A child, one of our children, my boys grew up at Gould Farm. Mm-hmm. And they come and grab a guest around the legs and say, come play croquet. Come show me how to do this. And that guest in that moment knows that the child's not looking through the screen of schizophrenia, through any kind of filter, but that they're a hero to that child, that they're loved. And often our guests who are slow to speak, who are most reserved, most withdrawn, can be drawn out quickly by the children, and they'll speak and they'll smile at the children and be engaged at a level that could never happen in a doctor's office.
We're talking to Donna Burkhart, acting executive director of Gould Farm, a highly regarded residential therapeutic community in the Berkshires, dedicated to helping adults with mental illness since 1913. You know, Donna, as I hear your wonderful voice, I get the feeling that there's one thing that you're angry about.
Angry?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it's the way in which we as a society have stereotyped the mentally ill and created this, and you've said a couple of times during this interview so far, it's our fault. How do we get over that?
I think because I'm a small systems person, I think it's bit by bit. It's by speaking from our hearts and being true to what we know and reaching out every single person who says, today, I can make a difference in creating community in the world, and it can be ever so small. That's what we practice at Gould Farm. It's not the big, wonderful things that, you know, the president of the board necessarily does, but it's a simple acts from person to person that are the threads that bind people together and that begin the process of healing. And that's true in our society at large as well. So I think it is simply people being able to speak, to reach out, to say, I'm not afraid. And when they hear that fear, to look it in the face and address it and say, sorry, but you're wrong. This is not, violence is not caused by people who are mentally ill and they should be locked away. We need to bring those who are struggling with vulnerabilities into the heart of the community and help them find what they need. And that diminishes both our fear and it diminishes the issues of violence, and not just for those who are mentally ill, but in our society.
Donna, we're hearing, as we listen to you, pretty fantastic story. The question is, you can only handle how many people at one time?
We have 40 guests at any given time.
And I'm sure there are people right now who know somebody who is who is schizophrenic or who they would love to see at Gould Farm. How do they do that?
Again, pick up the phone, go to our website, call, and we begin the conversation. Everything begins with that conversation. We are, as a private organization, dependent on family connections. We try to be accessible, and we know that our system at large is broken. There's 1,000 ways in which different organizations are trying to affect that, to make that difference. There's been huge improvements, and we have such a long way to go. Society is so cumbersome. Anything. The mental health system is so cumbersome. Anything that cumbersome cannot be held in the palm of the hand and fixed. And we know that. And it takes so much time and so much energy. But that's no reason to not attempt to do it. And so that's what we've been doing for 100 years and will continue to do into our next century.
Obviously, it's not-for-profit.
Not-for-profit.
And you have a board of trustees?
We have a board of directors.
And who sits on that?
We look for people who have experience in mental health, in human resources, in business, and who have enormous hearts. We look for people who have pockets. And often we find those who have had the tragedy of mental health in their families who want to change the way that the world addresses mental health issues.
I'm looking at a beautiful book here. It's called Gould Farm, 100 Years of Good Food. What's it about?
It is about the farm, first of all, but it is also about the way food is central to how we gather in community. Small groups to large groups, food is often the catalyst that brings us together. And at Gould Farm, what's so amazing is that we grow a huge amount of what we eat. And then we pick it, harvest it, and in our kitchens, we prepare it, serve it, and then we join together in community to eat that. And it is such a symbol of what keeps the community cohesive. And it is simply also about wonderful, wonderful cooking. Recipes that have been staples at the farm, brand new recipes from a guest who may have brought some family recipe to our kitchen and it's become a part of who we are. It also captures the breadth of the work program, the breadth of our history. So it is under the guise of a cookbook, but it is a catalog of all that the farm is coherently brought together under the rubric of food and how food creates community. So it's a read, not just a cookbook.
I heard Michelle Obama just the other night discussing food. She was talking to Hispanic population and saying sometimes food becomes too important, which is why so many people are obese. Is this something that you folks at Gould Farm are aware of?
All our work is from the combination, the integration of mental health and physical health. That is at the heart of what we do. And the reason that so many people are obese in America, I think, is out of so much loneliness, so much lack. And when you have people gather in the true spirit of true community so that their souls are fed and not just their bodies, then you can counter some of those problems. So all our food, while it's plentiful, is geared toward good nutrition, absolutely. At the same time that we're serving good, wonderful meals, we are teaching exercise. We are teaching ways to take care of your body in a holistic way.
When you teach exercise, what do you teach?
After a good, healthy lunch, Someone's sitting at the table, and whoever's leading a walk that day comes by and says, join us for a walk. And he says, no, I can't do that now. I'm too tired. And they say, oh, come on, we'll be back before you know it. And with a bit of urging, that person comes along, does a 20-minute walk. Do that every day. It makes a difference. And so that would never happen for someone sitting alone in a house, isolated, but in the sense of community, those things can happen. Volleyball, hiking. We just recently did a overnight hike up Mount Greylock. People worked all week. Some worked Saturday morning, went on the hike, came back and picked up with chores on Sunday when they got back. And so again, when there's reason for exerting, for being involved with something, it makes all the difference in the world. And that's the effect of community.
But when they leave, the community is limited.
But what we're doing is not teaching them to take a walk. We're teaching them to create community around them. And that's the challenge for Gould Farm, because it's a natural community.
Develop that for us a little bit. If somebody gets out and you're teaching them how to develop community, what are your expectations that they're going to do?
Hopefully connect with people around them. And that's the value of the supported transition program, is that we help them to link to people around them so that they're not in isolation. Mm-hmm. They're not withdrawn, but they have learned ways in which they can initiate participation that are appropriate and that can succeed. And that takes time and practice. So a lot of what we do at Gould Farm is going through the motions over and over so that those structures become internalized. Ways of being with people.
I'm looking at a beautiful picture of a bunch of hens.
Those are our Rhode Island Reds.
Rhode Island Reds, and it's a full-page picture. It's gorgeous. And right next to it is a recipe for vinaigrette chicken thighs with fresh farm baby spinach. When somebody sees a dish like that at Gould Farm, are they ever saying, what's this?
Sure, but when there isn't an alternative McDonald's meal available, they're hungry, they've worked all morning, and they develop a taste for real food.
Boy, it looks great. Shrimp and scallops in salsa verde. We used to hang around Greenwich Village, my wife and I, and we'd go into a place on Bleecker Street and get mariscada a la bilbiana, which was a green sauce also. So this looks wonderful. It takes a lot to translate these wonderful ideas into feeding, maybe 200 people.
Sure. But it takes a lot to do anything worthwhile in life. And when you're doing it together on a team and you've got good, clear direction to do that, it works. And each individual involved in that process is building cognitive skills, is learning a million other things that they can do if they can learn to be a part of doing this.
I was sitting here thinking about that certainly you're going to have some clients who are vegetarians.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And so I see a wonderful recipe here called roasted tofu with lemon prunes, Kalamata olives, and farm parsley. So if somebody comes in and says, I don't eat meat, are we able to supply them with something that is an alternative?
Absolutely. And not just as alternatives for vegetarians. I mean, we all eat tons of vegetables because that's what comes out of our garden. We had a kale spanakopita the other day that was to die for. And people suddenly realized that it wasn't spinach, but it was delicious.
Some of these pictures, which the photography is amazing here.
Right, and that photography is done by staff expert photographers, by guest expert photographers. So Rose, who did this cookbook, whose dream and inspiration this was, drew a community of some almost 50 people participated in the creation of this, so that, like everything we do, this is another true community effort. Guests had input, staff had input, and the wider community supported it in a really great way. We used Troy Bookmakers just near Albany here. So
Troy Bookmakers helped put this thing together.
Right.
Tell me about the critique of Gould Farm. Clearly, there's always, there are always people who say, you're not doing it right.
Right.
Do you ever have that?
Of course we do. And often we aren't doing it exactly right because we're not doing it according to formula. But we are making it as we go along. We learn from experience, but it's often the things that are imperfections in what we do that can be of the greatest value to our guests. It's what we do with our mistakes. Any mistake can be redeemed if the response to it is appropriate.
Okay, so give me an example of a mistake you may have made in the past that you corrected.
Okay, I didn't even correct it, but just so I, as you know, you said in the beginning, I lost a son.
Yeah.
So it's very easy for my husband and I, or for me in particular, being a mother and a woman, to see my son in every young lad that comes through the door. So I have to remain objective. And occasionally, when I become very committed to someone's treatment and course through the Gould Farm program, and maybe there's a relapse and he needs to leave. It's a clinical decision. We make that. And I remember one young man in particular who relapsed with drugs and alcohol, with alcohol specifically, and he had to leave. And I wanted to fight that with every bone in my being because I knew Gould Farm was right for him. Gould Farm was ultimately the answer for him. And the team around me said, Donna, and I stepped back. And I let go. We operate as a team always. So that keeps us on the straight and narrow. And so I stopped. And he came back to us at a later date, finished a course with us, and is doing great. I have a relationship with him over time. He is a true former farmer who will always be a part of Gould Farm. That's what I love about our guests. They, 20 years later, 5 years later, they come back. You don't go back ever and visit a hospital ward, but we have a reunion coming up, and the people we have coming back, staff, of course, and guests. But it's not just, the big shots from history who are coming back for a Gould Farm reunion. It's the guests who may have been there for 6 months, who have been attached to Gould Farm for 20 years. Those are the ones that matter to me, who are coming home and saying Gould Farm was an essential piece of my life. Didn't fix everything, but it was an essential piece of my life.
Well, it's you're an extraordinary woman. I think anybody who's been listening to this will know that. I was fascinated when I read the introduction, and we talked about your Mennonite background and your work basically abroad and working in, I guess, Congo. How much of that zeal, which could only be described, is transferable to other human beings?
I don't know, and that's not my main goal. But I greet each person and work with each person and speak to the best and most positive in who they are. Maybe that comes from some Quaker associations at some point in our life and my Mennonite associations. But you speak to that of God in everybody, whether or not you can see it, whether or not they even recognize it, and whatever God means. But you speak to that truest core in an individual, and that is so essential in mental health work more than any other work. We can take it for granted. It's easy for the most part when we have affinities for people. But when that affinity is blocked by distorted thinking or by trauma or by depression, then you need to go beyond those vulnerabilities and speak to and reach for that truest essence in another person. And that's the basis of all good therapeutic work. That's the basis of all community building in the world. And that's just simply what I've been taught to do. I feel so fortunate to have been raised in an atmosphere where that was a given. And losing Chris, I think...
Your son.
Our son, losing Chris, has helped Wayne and me and our younger son, Shay, to do that with our hearts wide open. I know that when we lost Chris, I said, almost said, I can never do this work again. Or Wayne and I looked at each other and said, this is the work we have to do because it's no less than we're asking of every single guest who comes to Gould Farm to embrace what you cannot bear. And they come with vulnerabilities that they hate, they want to deny, they don't want to accept. But when they learn to embrace it and walk through it, there's life on the other side. And for us, on the other side of our grief, through doing this work, there has been tremendous gratitude. And I've gained every bit as much as I've given, more than I hope I've been able to give through these interactions with every guest and the community at Gould Farm. I'm so grateful.
All of us in these jobs, I mean, I'm 72, each of us has to be cognizant of the fact we don't last forever and that somebody else has to come next. How do you provide for that?
Oh, the right people come to the farm. Right now we're looking for an executive director and we have some great candidates and I'm very excited about the next person. The fresh water in the river. I have flowed down the Gould Farm River for 30 years, our family has, and I'm very excited about having someone new and focused on board, but I've also been happy to step up as acting executive director for a long interim while we find exactly the right person mm-hmm. who has both the heart and the acuity to lead a sophisticated organization and actually a quite complex organization. It's not just your everyday business.
No, indeed. We only have a couple of minutes left.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the teams just mm-hmm. a bit. We operate by teams here at WAMC too, but it's never like the Yankees and the Mets. Mm-hmm. The teams shift all the time mm-hmm. depending on what the task is. What is the leadership model? In other words, is there always a head of the team? Or how do you work it?
It's a lot of working together, of course. But there is an executive director and responsible to the board of directors. The executive director is the fulcrum that works between that. There is active management that supervises the work teams, but participates at all levels. It is a flat enough organization that the executive director does the dishes. And that's an important thing. I want you to know that I take my turn, every one of us. About every 2 weeks, we get a turn doing the dishes. And of course, that's the dinner dishes. And the Forest and Grounds does the dishes on a regular basis at breakfast and lunch. Yeah. But in the evenings, after our dinner together, we all take turns doing the dishes. So that speaks a lot about the organization, that the executive director is very hands-on and knows what's going on in every aspect of what's going on at the farm.
Well, when I get here in the mornings, quite frequently, I do the dishes too, and I'm not happy about it. Which have been left in the sink, you know, by somebody else. In the age of instant communication, I quite frequently take a picture of them and send it out to our staff and say, who did it?
Of course, we do that too. We're just like the community anywhere, and that's what's so wonderful about Gould Farm. We're real.
Let's talk for a second about two things. Number one, this is a beautiful cookbook. Gould Farm, 100 Years of Good Food. It's a beautiful volume. And how does somebody get it?
Go on our website and we have...
The website is?
GouldFarm.org.
One word.
GouldFarm, one word, .org.
.org. And if somebody wants to volunteer for this wonderful organization, same thing.
Same thing. Go on there and under Human Resources or just pick up the phone and call me.
Well, Donna Burkhardt, this has been a wonderful hour. Went very quickly for me.
Oh, and for me too. It's been so great to talk with you, Alan. You've been a legend, and I feel very privileged to have a one-on-one with you.
Well, we're very happy. I've always wanted to do this. Donna Burkhardt is acting executive director of Gould Farm, a wonderful residential therapeutic community in the Berkshires, dedicated to helping adults with mental illness since 1913. Donna, you're always welcome here, and we thank you so much for spending this time with us.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on the In Conversation with Alan series, or to order additional copies of this or any interview in the series, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us on the web at wamc.org. Thank you.